As we all know, the garden is a refuge. It's seen as a refuge, a place to forget worldly cares, removed from the real life that lies outside. The real life that lies outside. But when we get our hands in the earth, we connect with the cycle of life in nature through which destruction and decay are followed by regrowth and renewal. The new book, The Well-Gardened Mind, provides a new perspective on the power of gardening to change people's lives. Sue Stewart-Smith investigates the many ways in which mind and garden can interact and explore how the process of tending a plot can be a way of sustaining an innermost self. Stewart-Smith's own love of gardening developed as she studied to become a psychoanalytic psychotherapist. Again, the name of the new book is The Well-Gardened Mind, and we welcome Sue to the roundtable this morning. How are you?
I'm thrilled to be with you, Joe.
Thank you very much for being with us. It's very nice to have you on the program. I know you didn't plan it this way, but what a good time to have a book like this out.
Yes, it proved to be an extraordinary time because I look at some of the passages that I wrote in the book, particularly about how looking back through history at times of crisis, people turn to the earth, they turn to nature's powers of regeneration. And little did I think that we would be in the midst of that kind of crisis when the book actually came to be published.
Some of us do it because we have a love of gardening and we want to do it. Others are doing it for the first time because, well, quite frankly, there's nothing else to do. So you hit it nicely both ways, don't you?
I think that's right, and I think this. I think the movement of people coming fresh to gardening is potentially very exciting because, you know, one of the things I communicate in the book is that we have become generally as a society so disconnected from nature, and plants can feel rather alien, and actually we're missing out on a huge benefit for our mental health and our physical health too. So I think that very act of connecting with nature, I hope that people are finding it beneficial. It seems as if, you know, the crisis certainly triggered in a lot of people. I'm not sure you said they were doing it because there's nothing else to do, but I think there's something very attractive about growing your own food and very compelling about things like sowing seeds. You know, when the future's sort of very, very uncertain or full of anxiety,
yes.
You know, nature hasn't been through all the upheaval. Nature's not going through the upheaval that we're going through. You know, it's remained constant, as it were, in terms of the progress of the seasons and everything, you know, growing as it does. So that's very stabilizing for us and very calming, I think.
Absolutely. And all I meant was that, you know, I think a lot of us may have a list of 300 things that we want to do if we're alone and don't have anything to do. And you think, well, I'll never get to any of this stuff. And if you're stuck in the house for 6 months, suddenly you rip through that list pretty quick, don't you?
Yes, you do. But I think gardening lends itself in a
Absolutely.
Way. I know lots of people thought they would read, you know, those great big novels they'd never read. But many people have found the concentration quite difficult, you know, in this very unsettling time.
Yeah.
Whereas gardening doesn't demand that of you. And it's, you know, it can be a very calming and mindful activity.
So let's talk about that. What does it require from you? What do you need? Because there's a certain amount of concentration, but what do you need? What do you need to employ to have that act of gardening be good for you, and obviously be good for what you're doing with the earth as well?
Well, I think just to pick up on the mindful point I was making, when we work with our hands. We're actually engaging a large area of our brain that is, you know, we underuse our hands. You know, we have so many gadgets now and these screens that we swipe and so on. But when we engage our hands, we're engaging quite a lot of our brain that is relatively underused. And we do have to focus, we do have to concentrate, but it's not the same kind of attention that we need to apply for so many other of our sort of 21st century tasks. So there's an element of rebalancing the brain that goes on. And also, I think there's the sheer satisfaction we can get from doing something that has a real outcome, that has a real tangible result. You know, we live increasingly in a virtual world. And I think during, you know, with lockdown and isolation and, you know, people, we've been thrown back and our dependence on screens more than ever. So I think that real contact with a bit of you know, nature, material reality, and being able to shape it is very helpful at a time like this.
I mentioned this in the introduction, but tell us a little bit, as you do in the book, about how your own love of gardening developed.
Yes, my own love of gardening. Firstly, I'd grown up with the story of my grandfather, who was a prisoner of war in Turkey during the First World War. And he got the opportunity in 1920 to enroll on a 12-month-long horticultural rehabilitation program. He'd been left very traumatized and actually very malnourished as well. And gardening, you know, that 12 months of gardening really restored him. And in the book, I sort of go and find the place where he did that. And it was clearly a very lovely, remarkable sort of large country house garden in England. So I'd grown up with that. That was in my background. I came to gardening myself through marrying my husband in my mid-20s. He's a garden designer and a very knowledgeable plantsman. And he's become, over the course of the last 20, 30 years, a rather celebrated garden designer. And we started making a garden together around a barn that we've lived in for the last 30 years. On a very windy, you know, stony field, as it were, because it was an arable field. And so that was my introduction, actually, I sort of followed in his footsteps. And then my real love of gardening started about 5 years after that, when we created a little herb garden for me to grow herbs in. And I'd always loved cooking. And just the business of sowing seeds, seeing them germinate, I still find it magic. And then having all these lovely different kinds of herbs that you can't possibly buy in the supermarket to use in the kitchen, that really hooked me into gardening.
Given that you were studying and studying to be a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, does that, I assume at some point that opened your eyes to what is happening within you as you are gardening and those doors start to open?
Yes, I think that's right. And I think we underestimate certain elements of our relationship with the natural world and how stabilizing they can be. So for instance, feelings of attachment we can form to a plot or to, you know, to certain specific plants, you know, maybe a house plant even. It may be a tree that we particularly love. These it's very easy to dismiss the emotional importance of these relationships. So I was interested in, you'll know, Joe, that there's a lot of interviews in the book with people.
Sure.
I visited a lot of projects. So what I wanted to do was kind of dig a bit deeper and find out more about the sort of less conscious effects of gardening on us, and particularly how it can help people get through trauma and loss and other big life changes. So that was my aim in writing the book.
I mean, you talk about this and write about it, about this how gardening has direct antidepressant effects on us. What is going on there? Scientifically, what is happening as we garden that is allowing that to take place?
Well, one of the important things is that gardening works on us at so many different levels. So if we start at the kind of neurological brain level, there are benefits that we all derive from simply being in a natural setting. So you don't have to be gardening, as it were, to experience
right.
this. But we know that people's blood pressure is lowered, their heart rate is lowered, and their levels of the stress hormone cortisol are reduced after about 20 minutes within a kind of restful, green, natural setting. So that's just to sort of begin with. And then there are all the psychological effects. And, you know, one of the other ones which I highlight quite a lot in the book is the kind of empowerment of gardening, that that it gives us a very accessible form of creativity. So this came across very strongly in people I interviewed inside prisons and veterans recovering from PTSD. That actually, you know, if you feel either that you've never managed to do anything good in your life, or on the other hand, if you've just been left feeling very helpless and powerless by let's say a traumatic experience, working with nature, nature gives us, it gives us a head start really in terms of creating something, because the plants and the seeds, they get on with it if we provide them the right environment. But actually, we can look at this thing, let's say these beautiful flowers we've grown, or, let's say a pumpkin, we make soup from it and we can share it. And actually, it gives people a very big boost in terms of something they can feel proud of, that they've made this thing happen. And I think that's not, we can all benefit from that. But for people who are really struggling with some kind of mental health problem, that's invaluable.
You mentioned in passing just a moment ago about the prison program and what you did, as you write in the book, about this Rikers Island program. Tell us a little bit about that and what it does for, I mean, that obviously is an extreme situation, but I'm interested in what you found as a result.
The Rikers program is a wonderful program. It's run by the New York Horticultural Society, and it's been running for nearly 30 years, and started quite small with one garden, has really expanded, particularly in the last 5 or 6 years. There are now 8 gardens on Rikers. And also the Hort run internships in the community for community gardening. So there's a kind of follow-on program. And what their follow-up studies show is that the reoffending rate in people who complete their program is 10 to 15%. And that you have to compare that with the reoffending rate for prisoners who are not taking part in that. And actually the reoffending rate is as high as 60%. So there's no question it really helps people change their lives. And I think there's something that just simply working with growth and change and the cycles of the season helps people have a belief that it might be possible to change direction, it might be possible to change their lives.
And that possibility, I also want to go back to a word that you used earlier that I wrote down because I wanted to get back to it, and that is creativity, because there's great creativity that you can have as well. And that gets you thinking, and that is seems like a wonderful outlet.
I think it is. And actually, the other thing about gardening that I think is very, very helpful in relation to creativity is that we can go outside and we can work off a lot of negative emotions. You can work off whether you're digging or weeding or cutting back brambles or whatever. You can work off whether it's anger or frustration or you can work off these emotions. But at the same time, you're actually aiming for something that is creative. So I think a garden, sort of in a way, the way I see it is, it gives you license to be destructive in a certain kind of way, so you can unleash all these things, but it is destructiveness in the service of growth. And that, I think, is very helpful as well.
Yeah, it's good to have focused destruction, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and it gives us a way of as I said, of channeling that. And you know, a lot of creativity originates from channeling destructiveness towards something of its opposite.
I'm also curious about something that you mentioned in passing, and that is when you, as you do this, and for you it was herb gardening herbs. What
yes,
is it?
Herbs.
Yeah, what is it about herbs that was especially about that as opposed to another type of gardening?
Well, I think different people find different ways into gardening. So there's no point in growing something that you're not going to either enjoy eating or you know, growing pink flowers if you don't like pink, as it were. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it was like I was already passionate about cooking. So that became, food was my way in. But it's not, that's not the case for everybody. And I, you know, I now grow lots of flowers as well. I don't want to give the wrong impression. And,
no.
And you know, quite quickly growing herbs, spread, you know, moved on to growing vegetables, which I now do a lot of. So I think it is simply about finding what gives you a buzz, you know, and what gives you that sense of real pleasure. Because, you know, growing your own food, growing your own flowers is a very, very affirmative thing to do.
Sue Stewart-Smith's new book is The Well Garden Mind. Sue, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you for having me today, Joe.
Great pleasure. Again, the book, The Well Garden Mind, you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.